The Balut Kiki Project is a proud member of Bunk Collective.
It's another day, and that means another fun project. Welcome to the Balut Kiki Project. I am Mel. Kung first time yung makinig sa amin, welcome. And thank you for joining us. I'm sure you'll have a great time. Huwag niyong kalimutan i-click yung like, follow, and subscribe button para wala kayong ma-miss out sa aming future projects. Also, if you want to buy us a coffee, which we will greatly appreciate, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/balutkiki. If you've been here before, welcome back and thanks for joining us again. Jeff will be joining us today, and we will talk about sexuality and spirituality. We feel that it is important to talk about this because people have this misconception that members of the LGBTQIA+ community are very one-dimensional, that we're all about our sexuality. There's more to us than that. And so we will explore this with our guest today, Nancy Shadlock. She is a former pastor who is now a life and a coming out coach, and she's based out of Canada. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy.
You're tuned into the Balut Kiki Project.
Yes, should we start? Nancy, first of all, what pronouns do you want us to use for you?
She and her is great.
All right, Nancy, thanks again for gracing the Balut Kiki Project. It's definitely an honor to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
So this is Nancy Shadlock from Calgary, Canada. And I'll leave it up to you, Nancy, to tell our audience about yourself and what it is that you do exactly.
Sure. I am a proud queer woman in Calgary, as you mentioned, and I have a wife and two sweet babies. Aww. My wife and I were pregnant at the same time. I was a former pastor. I have a master's degree in spiritual formation and did a practicum in spiritual direction where I met with people, helped them pay attention to what's going on in the deeper places. And then that's kind of morphed over the years into now I do coming out coaching and helping people on the coming out journey so that they don't feel so alone and can have support in stepping into like the fullest version of who they are.
And you have a wonderful podcast. I love your voice. It's so calming. And your podcast is called
The Coming Out Chronicles.
Nancy, what was it like growing up for you? You grew up in Kenya for a time?
I did, yeah. For part of the time, my parents were missionaries. And so I grew up in quite a Christian context. And I would say that like my spirituality was really important to me and like having a connection with God and things. And I also heard, you know, all the verses that said it wasn't okay to be gay. And so I kind of had this inner conflict that I kept pushing to the back of my mind and trying not to pay too much attention to. And I didn't. Like in some ways, I kind of had forgotten about it in some circumstances. Okay. But I would say like probably my first memory of thinking about this was as young as maybe 12. Mm-hmm. And thinking like, oh, I wonder if I might be gay. And it was weird because I was like watching the news and I saw a kid get bullied because he was gay. And I don't know why I thought that I might be gay from watching that because I wasn't necessarily bullied about it or anything. But just something in me was like, oh, what if that happens to me? But I just kind of kept pushing it back and kept living a very good girl life and moving forward and all the right things to do, I guess. And went to Bible
missionary's daughter.
Yeah, exactly. Went to Bible college and became a youth pastor and then went to get my master's in spirituality. So just kind of kept going. But then as I was doing that work of sitting with people and listening to them, helping them listen to the deepest parts of themselves, I couldn't help but also listen to my own deepest parts and get honest there. And I think it was like once I got a context of people that were able to support me in that and to be able to hold both of those tensions of being able to be spiritual and face into my sexuality, then I felt safe enough to go forward.
So you became a pastor first before you came out, or did you come out before you became a pastor?
No, I became a pastor first. You know, it's interesting that you say that, because one of the stories for me that I kind of had these moments where it was like a gopher. Do you have gophers?
I don't like think sticks we up do, but we, head. Yes, yes.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day, yes, exactly.
So like it comes out and like looks around. Is it safe? No, it goes back down. Okay. So these moments that I had. Another one was in grade 12. I was reading Philip Yancey's What's So Amazing About Grace. And there was a story in there about a pastor who came out and then lost his church and his wife and his kids and all these different things. And that, again, I was like gripped with this fear of like, what if that happens to me? Because already, you know, at 18, I knew I wanted to be in ministry of some sort and help people. But the only way I knew was to like marry a man, be a pastor. Mm. Like even that was edgy to be a pastor as a woman.
That's true.
Right. But then
no one was said.
Yeah. But then I just like was gripped by this fear. And I actually wrote the author and he wrote me back. It was really, really kind. But he recommended that I talk to someone in my local geographical area, which is wise. Which sure enough, like the youth pastor that I talked to was just kind of like, no, like these are the verses that say it's wrong. And so it kind of just like poked my head back down.
Yeah.
But then recently
Kenya
in the last,
still at that time,
this was in Canada again, okay, for grade 12. But recently I wrote a blog article about like what I would say to my younger self. Mm-hmm. And like, I would have said, you can become a pastor and be gay. Like I wasn't actually out when I was a pastor, but I would say that some of the work that I do now is pastoral.
Yes.
And so I had no idea as a kid that that could be possible, that people would respect me in the Christian world and that I could be authentic in my queerness.
I don't know how many Filipinos you know, but I'd just like to tell you about the Philippines, where in our culture, sexuality and spirituality are opposite ends of the spectrum that never are supposed to meet.
Yeah.
So we don't talk about sex education in schools.
The church has a very strong grip on politics. Even politics play to religion to get votes. So the church, while on paper there is separation between church and state, in practice there really isn't. I think we're 80% Christian. As Jeff mentioned, we are the largest Christian country in this part of the world. We were under Spain for over 300 years.
It's practically living in a Spanish convent for three centuries and then 50 years of Hollywood. That's the Philippine history right there in a nutshell. And I understand that spirituality and religion are not necessarily the same thing. But that's exactly organized religion in the Philippines, being under Catholic, Christian, this culture has prevented Filipinos from getting much needed information when it comes to their sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even, so it's even basic reproductive health, even contraceptives are controversial. While it is available, the government and the church does not support it because church says it's wrong to use contraceptives. So even, in 2021.
Yeah, so you have a lot of people like Melanie and I growing up, you know, really, really confused, thinking that we were bad people. You know what I mean? Because it's either you're completely spiritual or you give in to your sexuality.
Yeah.
You can't be gay. You can't be queer and be a good Christian.
Yeah. I feel you. Like I lived that as well. And, you know, thinking that I was bad if I was going to give in to the sin or not keep praying in a way. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that helped me was being in groups of Christians that were willing to like look at the scriptures and go deeper into their meanings and their cultural contexts and not just be spoon fed. Oh yeah, this is what you have to believe. But like really being able to dig in has been so helpful. And one of the resources that I want to mention to your people that I interviewed the director on my podcast for this movie that's coming out soon called 1946. And 1946 was the first year that homosexuality appeared in the Bible. Before that, it was like all about, you know, adulterers and fornicators and like people that were being promiscuous and also like hurting others with their sexuality. Mm-hmm. And it got twisted into this homosexual word that has been so hurtful to so many people for so many years now. Mm-hmm. And all because of a mistranslation. And they mm-hmm. go into the documentary, like one person tried to stand up and be a whistleblower and be like, I don't think this is accurate. Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah, we don't think so either, but it's already in print. So let's just keep going with it. Like, oh.
What's weird is that for most Filipinos, Mel and I, at least in our experiences, like we went to Catholic schools because we were meant to, you know, grow up really good Christians and all. So we're aware the Bible was just like rammed into our system from first grade until we graduated from high school. And that's all fine. But then again, growing up queer, you realize that there's 31,000 passages in the Bible, but people usually use the 7 clobber passages to, you know, we even had so much so that we even had somebody comment on our third episode where a couple other gay friends
which
do the podcast with us
sprouted or encouraged these next episodes.
Few episodes. Yeah. Because we were told that we chose, these are her words, basically, that we chose to walk, to live in a semblance of chaos instead of choosing an enlightened path. Mm-hmm. And this is somebody who's only listened to a 40-minute episode of our lives and have not even walked, you know, a full hour in our shoes. So, and the problem, Nancy, is that there's sort of like a double stigma that there's experiences. If you're a gay Christian, you feel additionally rejected by other gays for being openly religious.
Yeah,
because the LGBT environment remains very critical and dismissive of Christianity. So gays or queers are sort of like marooned in this island between sexuality and spirituality. Like, nobody wants us.
Yeah, I get that. Like, particularly, that both parties are like, no, you're not gay enough for us if you're going to be Christian, or you're not Christian enough for us if you're gay. Then
that's true.
And what people don't realize, I don't know if you, what you have to say about this as a pastor, is that what these people are doing is not really Christ-like, is it? Because Christ didn't hang around with the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the religious people, but hung around with the sinners and the tax collectors and the prostitutes and said that blessed are the poor in spirit, which is like Melanie and I raising our hands like, yeah, that's us.
Yep, up in the front row.
Yeah.
So how do you usually, for young queer people who are met with this kind of disdain in society, what do you tell them to, you know, how do they face these people who tell them this?
I would say if you distill down my work, it comes to this place of helping people like hear themselves, know themselves. And I would say that's knowing the divine. And like my sadness of organized religion is that it's kind of outsourced our power to someone out there making rules for us, making decrees, judging us. And it's like God is this other outside force that's like looking at us, judging, you know, that kind of
feeling. Feels so far away. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't feel like God doesn't feel like he's right here. Mm-hmm. It with organized, at least in my experience, it feels like he's so far away and I have so many things to fulfill before he even looks at me and pays attention and or even notices me. I'm pretty sure that experience is not unique.
No, I would say it's all about these rules, right? You need to follow these rules and then you'll be loved or liked or seen. Mm-hmm. But I have this kind of, maybe it's heretical view of like the divine is in each one of us. Mm-hmm. Like, we are the divine. Like we are an expression of the divine. If we believe that we're made in the likeness of God, then we are living that. And so helping people like listen to that still small voice that's within us, connect to the divine in our own personal way. That's the way that we'll be able to move forward and step forward in our lives in authenticity, in courage, in being like, well, you can believe what you want, but I have my own direct line to the divine. So that empowers me to keep going.
How is it being a pastor for you? And knowing who you were?
Again, I like was so good at pushing it to the back of my mind that I kind of had, I think, convinced myself that it wasn't a real, you know, concern, or that it was my thorn in the flesh. And so it was like my spiritual thing to just keep fighting and praying away. And I was doing a great job because I was so pious and not doing any of the sexual sins or things like that.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, it was like fairly easy because I wasn't that into guys. I wasn't courageous enough to have come out yet. So yeah, like looking back at it now, I feel kind of like, oh, was I totally living a lie? But I don't think so. Like I was living as true as I could then. And in some ways, some of the messages that I shared with my people then are still the messages that I say now, of like love and, you know, look for the ways that you can connect to the divine and share the divine in the world. So,
how long were you a pastor for?
It was about 2 years that I was a youth pastor. And then I did kind of lay ministry in my church. Yeah. I was on the board of my church and different things like that.
And when, what was the impetus for you to say that perhaps that was not the end path for you?
To stop being a pastor? Yeah. So I left being a pastor and went on a pilgrimage around North America. And I visited all across the US and Canada and visited people that I knew because I had lived overseas. And so I had friends everywhere and would go to them and say, like, who's wise in your life? Who can I go and talk to and like ask questions of for my life? And so I would ask them, and one of these women was a woman pastor actually. And she said, okay, so you didn't love the rah-rah fun and games of the youth ministry. You like the conversations. Why don't you just focus on the conversations? And I was like, what? You can do that? That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And so she said, yeah, there's this thing called spiritual direction where you journey with people who are wanting to have these deeper conversations. And so I then started looking for schools that I could do schooling in that. And most of them said, you had to be over 35 even to apply. And I was like, what? I'm only 25. I want to do it now.
Long way to go.
I know, right? But I finally found one in Vancouver that would take me. And it was a very transformational experience. And I was really grateful. It was a Baptist college, but the prof that was in charge of our program was so expansive in her spirituality. And we would learn from Buddhists and atheists and like all kinds of different spiritualities to kind of expand my box and just like blow it out of the water and be like, whoa, like there's so much wisdom from so many different paths and places. And by just saying like, there's just this one narrow way, like actually really limits God. God is so much bigger than that. God speaks to us in so many different ways.
Yeah.
How is it for your mental health? I don't know how much you know about our podcast, but Mel and I have been diagnosed with severe clinical depression, and I was diagnosed last December. And so we've had, we are still going through it now. We've had bouts with suicidal ideation.
Yes.
And I think it would be denying your experience, what you've been through, by not acknowledging that a huge part of the discrimination that you've felt and the turmoil inside you has been because you've also lived your life as a queer person. And, you know, isn't spirituality vital to mental health? And how important do you think it is?
I would say, yeah, that spirituality has been the thing that has sustained me through all of this. And like any time that I felt alone or abandon, knowing that I have that direct line to the divine has been life-saving for sure. I've been blessed in that I haven't had like huge mental health effects. I think like I'm always in therapy and like working through different things, but I would say for the most part, I've been saved of that. I think I was very blessed to like land in a community in Vancouver that was having some of these conversations where I could feel supported and not totally alienated. But I will say that, yeah, for some of my clients, it's been so huge seeing the change of being able to come out. Like one of my favorite stories to share of hope is one of my clients about a year ago said, I'm gay, for the first time out loud at one of our retreats. I do virtual retreats with people all over. And that was the first time she'd said it to a group of people. And then she came and worked with me. We worked through like, who are the people that you want to share this with? Who's safe? What do you need in order to feel empowered in doing this? And like, she slowly worked through doing all that. And all these things started opening up for her of relationships and work. And all of a sudden she was laying on the couch with her girlfriend and had this moment of flashback of like, whoa, a year before this moment, I was laying on the couch ready to kill myself. And here I am now laying here with my girlfriend. And I just like, I can't believe how much has opened up, how much more hope I have because I had this support. And so I feel you, like I really feel you. And I want to offer that hope that it gets better.
When you talk about the direct line to divine, can you be more specific about that? If somebody is trying to do that as well, is there a...
Oh, you mean us, Jeff?
Yeah, for us, like what Nancy can teach us about this direct line to the divine.
Well, what comes up for you when I say that?
Like a lot of the things that people say about Catholicism is that you don't have to go to confession to a priest to be able to be forgiven. That you can actually, why do you have to have a middleman? That's what I, because a lot of people were caught up in tradition and rites and rituals. And then, you know what they say, Karl Marx said that religion is the opium of the people, you know? And so when you say that I have a direct line to the divine, I get that. Because at the moment, by the way, I've grown up ever since I've been clinically depressed. I've sort of stayed away from my religion and call myself now an atheist. Mm-hmm. And so, but I remain to be a good person. I will not be told otherwise. Mm-hmm. And that whatever is up there or this divine being that is greater than me and the universe, that I have a direct line to it.
I think there's this universal light and energy that's coming towards all of us and this love, but it's personal in how much we tune into that, how much we notice that, how much we're willing to receive that.
What did it take for you to be able to, I would think that it would be love, but to actually go and find somebody that you love and live a life with this person and have children and raise a family together?
Yeah, like it did take some letting go of my beliefs and my conditioning, what I was raised with, that it's wrong, that I'm going to go to hell, that I'm, you know, a sinner choosing the wrong path. Like so much of that had to be let go of. But yeah, I'm grateful for the way that I was doing that schooling that expanded my box before all of this, where I could see like, there's not just one path. There's not just one right way, because I don't believe that the divine would create all these people that are going to hell because they didn't know this one right path. So being able to already move into that realm of there's so much more going on here than we realize, that helped me to let go of some of those beliefs and those narrow ways of thinking. And then the other thing is just like community, having people that understood this, that had gone before me. Like there was a beautiful lesbian couple at my church that were participating in worship and helping to lead things, and they were respected by people. And I was like, whoa, I don't have to divorce my spirituality to embrace my sexuality. Okay, like I'm gonna lean into this. Yeah, mind blown.
What exactly do you do as a coming out coach? I don't know. I'm going to volunteer the information that Mel is basically out to everybody but her parents. And so if her parents are listening to this podcast, then those two minds will be blown as well. Yeah. But yeah, you're a coming out coach. What exactly does a coming out coach do? How do you help people live their truth?
Yeah, so it's very much that work of helping people to hear that energy of light and love coming towards them. It's helping people notice the beauty in who they are. Because I think, you know, so much of our growing up has been, you're wrong, you're bad, you're sinning.
Yeah.
And so to be able to turn that around and be like, actually, you're incredible. And you are so loved and you're so supported. And who you are at the core of who you are is beautiful. And mm-hmm. let's share that with the world, and like giving people little experiments that they can do to test that and see, oh, like all these ways that I was believing things are not actually the full stop truth.
Yeah.
There's a different way. And so helping people, you know, figure out who are the people that I want to tell this to, who are the safe ones that maybe would be good to start with. And then how can I tell my parents, and how can I show up in a posture that's not like, oh, I have this thing that I have to tell you and I feel really insecure about it and I'm nervous and I don't think you're going to accept me, versus there's this thing about me. I've wrestled with it. I've researched, I've done, you know, I've come to peace with it. Mm-hmm. I actually really love this part of who I am, and I love you. And so I want you to know more of me. And that's a very different posture, right? Than the first one.
I never thought about it that way.
You should be taking notes, Mel.
I know.
You can come see me for a session.
Yeah. Well, just one of the things that you mentioned earlier that, you know, I have honestly been thinking about is, like you said, it doesn't make sense to have a God to only accept certain people that if we're all created by God, and it doesn't make sense that he'll only say, oh, I'll only accept these people, especially considering that in the history of humans, Christianity started with Christ, but there were humans and cultures before Christ. We have the Jews, right, coming down, the Old Testament, basically. Mm-hmm. So are we saying that before, right? It doesn't make mm-hmm. sense. Or even just Aboriginal people, Native, mm-hmm. it doesn't make sense that, okay, what will happen to them? Just because they don't know, because mm-hmm. we've not reached them and ministered to them. They're in far-flung parts of the world, right? Christianity, not just Christianity, even Judaism and Islam spread slowly. It's not something that happened overnight. And so, you know, there must be heaven for them too, even if mm-hmm. they didn't know about yeah. God and Christ. So, yeah, it got me thinking, and I'm still thinking about it, that if it's, I don't think that the God of love will do that. Mm-hmm. And just say, oh, well, you didn't follow the stuff in my book. So,
yeah. Yeah, there's so many things that don't make sense if we only take them kind of in this literal way that they've often been taken.
That's so true.
And I think it's a lot of the church sort of like posits itself as a welcoming structure, but with what it's supposed to, like, God is love. But then you see Christians or Catholics holding up signs that says God hates fags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like using the word hate, which is, you know.
Or displaying unchristlike behavior.
And just like just saying that
who aren't even doing anything wrong.
My pet peeve, Nancy, is love the sinner, hate the sin. Mm-hmm. This doesn't sit well with me. And like, you have another sinner telling you, like, it's like transactional forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you know what I'm saying? And so that's like, yeah. And it was the Sermon of the Mount says that, why do you look at the speck in somebody else's eye and not see your own? And yeah. So a church of love espousing hate is just, it's just doesn't.
Yeah.
And it's so, it instead of like welcoming, it sort of like has pushed this away. And we're not sexual maniacal fiends. Mm-hmm. So that's what they think. And when they think about homosexuality, that they focus on the sex and forget that we believe in a God, we pray, we're God fearing. Mm-hmm. We are a loving people as well. And so, yeah.
And for a heterosexual person, like what percentage of their life is based on sex?
Yes.
Like probably exactly. About the same amount that ours is based on sex.
Exactly. How do you raise your children, Nancy, so that they become healthy spiritual beings and healthy sexual beings as well? Like, please talk to Filipino parents. What's your two cents about this, knowing that you have children? And
yeah. Well, I was just reading them a bedtime story before we started talking tonight, and I was reading them one called What Is God Like? And it's by Rachel Held Evans. It's a new kids book that's just come out, and it's really beautiful, and it's expansive in just like saying attributes of God, and is inclusive, like sharing how God is she and he and they, and like these expansive ways that blow our minds if we really sit with it. And then we also have another book, What Makes a Baby? And it's a really good, again, inclusive way of explaining sexuality and helping kids understand, like, not all bodies have a uterus. Some do, some don't. Not all, you know, all men have penises, and like all these different things that, like, not just assuming that because someone is in a body that appears a certain way, it's going to have all these parts, but just saying, kind of breaking it down to the mechanics. Yeah, the mechanics of like what makes a baby. You need a uterus, to a safe place for a baby, and you need a seed, and like all these different things. So it's beautiful that way.
So for queers listening out there, I know it's not like a one word answer or a shortcut, but what's the best way to reconcile these two conflicting identities, at least in the Filipino psyche, the spiritual and the sexual? Without
not just necessarily Filipino psyche, but someone who's grown up in Christianity, where you were taught that spirituality and sexuality cannot be together in one roof, under one roof. Yeah, how do we reconcile?
Yeah, I would even broaden it out from not just queer folks. Like, all people need to recognize that we have a spiritual side and a sexual side. And, you know, a lot of heterosexual Christians have shut off that side of themselves to even look at their own sexuality and recognize that, like, we have sexual needs and desires, and not just shut it all down, but to open it up and explore and be curious. And same for the spirituality. Like, how can I be more curious about this divine, and how could I connect with the divine personally? And how can I learn from a different culture or a different world religion or wisdom? I think for me, one of the gateways to really expanding my spirituality was reading Hafiz, who's a Muslim, like, Sufi mystic. And he wrote this beautiful poetry. And I looked up one little poem that I wanted to share with you tonight, if that's okay. I wish I could show you, when you are lonely or in darkness, the astonishing light of your own being. I wish I could show you, when you are lonely or in darkness, the astonishing light of your own being.
So it really comes from inside, eh?
Yeah. Like, rather than just like worshiping this God out there, like, there's a God within you, and noticing that godness, that divine flowing through you, in you, like who you are is incredible. And so in those moments, if either of you are feeling lonely or in darkness, you have an astonishing light within you. It's there.
That's a wonderful way to end this project, Nancy. And that sort of like puts on a different light on the fact that we were created in the same likeness of God, that God may be in every single person.
Yeah.
Is that a correct interpretation of that? Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Nancy. Can you tell us about Centered Life Coaching? Is it in Canada, in Calgary? There's a lot of Filipinos there.
Yeah, there are. I have some Filipino friends. I know three words in Tagalog.
Oh, do you? Are they good words?
Yeah.
Usually we're taught bad words.
I think so. People taught me them like they were good words. So I know.
Okay, we'll be the judge of that. What do you know?
Ipulaga.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Is that right?
Yes.
And then Tamana.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe I only know two.
Those are actually four words.
Actually five.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, four.
Four words.
All right. Nancy, invite all our listeners to your Coming Out Chronicles, your podcast.
Yeah, so the Coming Out Chronicles are on all the streaming services. I interview people on all kinds of coming out stories so that they can get into each other's shoes and understand each other, and not only LGBT stories, some of people that have done coming outs of other kinds, because I think if we're learning and growing, we're shedding a layer of who we are and we're coming out. And so if I can showcase people's stories and show that humanity, that we can start to understand each other more and more. And so I'd love for you to come and listen into some episodes. And then if you like what you hear, you can follow me on social. And I offer four retreats a year, and they're all virtual nowadays.
Yes.
So you can join from anywhere. And then I also do one-to-one coaching if you're wanting to have that personalized support in your coming out journey. And I would even say your coming in journey. You're like coming into yourself in a new way.
That's true. That's a really good one.
I like that, coming in instead of coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think you have to start from inside, sort this out first before you can sort of like
fully
come out. I never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Nancy. It was a pleasure having you on this project. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really lovely to meet you both.
You have just been served. This has been the Balut Kiki Project. Uniquely Pinoy, unapologetically queer. We are now declaring this project complete. Are we off air yet? Because these hills are killing me.
Thank you for clicking play. Don't forget to subscribe or follow on your favorite podcast streaming platform. And leave us a 5-star rating if you enjoyed the show.